Hey folks, before we start this week's episode, we gotta tell you about this special event coming up June 20th at 9 p.m. at Naked City Brewery and Tap House in beautiful Seattle, Washington. That's right, Air Raid Live number 2, featuring comedian Alicia Sanchez, Mikey and Maddie, and Pickwick, man. It's gonna be so much fun. We had a great time last year, it sold out super quick, so get on it. Go to brownpapertickets.com, type Air Raid Live into the search bar, and you should find it right there. Or you can visit www.air-raid.net, click on this episode's blog, and find the link. Buy your tickets. They're $12 in advance, $15 at the door. Let's get started with the show. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 254 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom, indeed, folks. We've got a veritable payload for you this week. Gene Genie of the band Future Twin, all the way from San Francisco, California, man. They were up here a couple weeks ago. We sat down in the backyard, chatted with Gene, and it was a fantastic, fantastic conversation. And I can't wait for you to hear it. It's a good one. It's a good one, folks. Gene is a wonderful person. Full of things to say, and we'll be getting to that shortly. And we'll also be featuring music from Future Twin, which I am highly stoked upon right now, and I think you guys will be as well. Future Twin, was playing a show up here in Seattle, a couple shows here in Washington, and then they went back down just for a little mini tour, and they went back home a couple weeks ago. And it was so much fun. It was so much fun to get to meet a couple of the ladies in the band. We're going to be featuring music from their I'm going to screw this up. It's an EP. There, I didn't screw it up. It's the Chillality EP, and you can find it at their website, futuretwin.com. So go and check it out. I believe they are also on Facebook and Twitter, so you know what to do there. They've got a couple shows coming up down for our listeners in California. July 18th in, what is this? What does that say? DeSilence, Oakland? July 18th, right there, Oakland, California. And then July 24th at Cooper's Tavern in Nevada City, California. So go and check those out if you're in the area. Let's. I am stressed out, folks. I am beside myself. I am pulling my hair out. I think I said that in the last episode. Just getting ready for things to kick off for the Air Raid Live show coming up this Saturday. Part of the reason why I am so stressed out is because my computer crashed on me. And I thought that I lost this episode that we're sharing with you this week. I found it. Somehow, man. Just buried somewhere. I don't know how it got there because I always do the same thing when I save files and everything on this computer. And something happened to the computer, man. I think it might be the heat. It might be the heat here in the backyard that's starting to mess with my computations. Might be it. I don't know. But I think I got everything working here. And if you're hearing my voice, everything's working fine now. We've got it taken care of. Okay? Only a few tickets left for the live show. So if you'd like to come, 9 p.m. at Naked City Brewery and Tap House right there in the screening room in Greenwood, Seattle. We're going to be doing it, man. doing a live air raid, second time, and we're very excited. Like I said, I'm very stressed out. Some tickets are still available. So go to brownpapertickets.com, type in Air Raid Live into the search bar. You should find it there. Or you can find it in our blog or our show blog post, okay, at the website, air-raid.net. And we would love to have you there. We'd love to see you. Let's do it, man. Let's have some fun. We're going to after party at the Baronoff across the street. It's going to be great. Okay. Oh, hey, and this is one thing I keep on forgetting to say. The first 27 people, I know, odd number, right? First 27 people through the door to come and grab their seats also get a limited edition numbered print of the Air Raid Live number 2 show poster. Okay? It's a risograph. I don't know what that means, but it's on like thick paper and it looks really cool. So if you want to get a free poster, man, you can come and be one of the first 27 to come and sit down, and we'll give those to you for free, man, for free. Because you're already paying, what, $12 to come and see the live show, or $15 at the door. It pays to be early, folks. It pays to use online ticket shopping things, right? Yeah. Another reason why I'm stressed out is because I did not watch Game of Thrones last night because I was back here in the backyard trying to get everything to work, and it went late, and I was unable to watch Game of Thrones. So what happened today, I'm perusing the interwebs, right, as one does, going through Facebook, and major fucking spoiler in my feed. What do you call it, the news feed or the Facebook feed? Major spoiler, man. I still haven't seen it as I'm re-recording this episode. Still have not seen it. Not happy, man. Not happy. I swear to God, I saw it just a split second. Just for a split second. The main plot point, right? And it felt like I was stung by a bee. Like, it hurt me that bad. Usually, I don't care about spoilers, but this was a biggie, folks. This was a really big one, man. And now I'm just, I've been walking through the day today just kind of sad. Just sad for what I'm about to watch tonight. This whole spoiler thing, man, finally caught up to me. Bullshit. All right, let's do this, shall we? This is a longer chat with Gene Genie. I hope you guys enjoy it. I enjoyed the hell out of talking with her. It's fantastic, and the music is great, so let's get to it. All right? All right, let's see. We are, once again, off of the EP, Chillality by Future Twin. This song is called Descending, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Also, stuff that's pre-taught moves, it doesn't apply. It's all freestyle because it's a study about kind of emerging neurological research and neural pathways. So basically, it was an article published about what staves off Alzheimer's. And so, these social scientists found that freestyle dancing was like 87% less likely to get Alzheimer's, whereas crossword puzzles, golf, and that stuff was like 12%. So if you want, I could explain the article in my little diatribe that I dole out on street corners to anyone that will listen, you know.
You're that type of person, you stand on a sidewalk and you're just like, hey, listen to me for a second.
Hey, listen. Well, you know, I mean, I do find myself standing on sidewalks a lot, talking to people randomly. There's a misconception that a lot of musicians are degenerates. Like, we just drink whiskey all the time and, you know, just, you know, it's all sex.
Which I should say, because you can't see this at home, people, but she is about to take a sip of whiskey.
Right now.
Jean?
Jameson, Irish whiskey. Thank you.
Jean, what's your last name? I didn't catch your last name.
Oh, my last name's Jeannie.
Jeannie. Perfect. Of the band Future Twin.
Yeah.
Up in Seattle from SF, from San Francisco, joining me here in the backyard. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks
for making the trek.
Trekking it.
Yeah, to the backyard. You guys have been on this little mini tour, just kind of working some stuff out. Just the two of you,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's me and Chelsea, who is doing a lot of the production, and she's a multi-instrumentalist as well.
Awesome.
And a really good singer. So
yeah,
together she's been playing with the full band live in San Francisco for probably 2 or 3 months. And then we had this tour booked, and then we had some bandmates that weren't sure if they could still come. And one person we kind of had to let go, and one person wasn't able to come. And so we decided to just make it happen
just
ourselves.
Fuck it. We're going to do it anyway.
We're getting the checks, okay? All the money. Yeah. So, but it's been really great because I recently bought a van. I co-purchased a van with one of my best friends, Aaron Bray. And that's the van that's in the driveway. We named her Loretta.
Loretta?
My friend Lizzie Legs came up with that, actually.
Beautiful van.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's an 89 Chevy Astro. You know, it's new to me.
Yeah, man.
And so now it's great because there's just, you know, for this tour, there's just two people, so we have a lot less to set up, and like it's more chill
yeah,
in that realm. But then also the first night that we came up, we left a day early and then just camped out in Mount Shasta National Park.
Oh yeah,
we
it's
were able
beautiful
to just
out
sleep
there.
In the back of the van because we have a sheepskin and sleeping bags, and
yeah, there you go.
Just two bodies, you know.
Right. So were you a little bit nervous though, just having the two of you like play these shows? Back up just a second. You've been on like a 5-show tour, right? Just a mini tour coming up through Oregon and Washington,
right?
And then you're going back home
tomorrow.
So you usually have a full band and just doing it with two people and kind of mixing things up and using samplers and stuff like that to play other people's parts. I mean, that's kind of got to be a little bit nerve-wracking, right?
Yeah, it's a little. We sat in our studio prior to leaving for the tour, and our eyes bled for hours as we watched YouTube tutorials
on how to use the shit.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God,
it was
I've
brutal.
Been down that road.
It is
the worst. It is
we
the
held hands.
Worst. Oh my God, I so understand that pain. I've had to do that so many times when something like, you know, I mean, this is not a very involved studio setup that I have back here,
right.
But still, I know nothing about
signal
it.
Chain,
I know that I have to turn things up
for
volume. That's about it.
There's a gain switch somewhere.
There's a gain. There might be a noise gate. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
But man, like learning how to use this shit has been such a learning curve for me. Like, a really bad
one. Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. That's what also stave off Alzheimer's because, you know, it's all about the wrinkles, the new wrinkles in your brain. So anytime it starts to feel frustrating and you're like, oh, I can't learn this. It's hard. Just remember that you're making new wrinkles and that you'll still be able to be eloquent when you're 95. if you make it that long.
So, well, I hope so. I hope so. If the whiskey has anything, whiskey and cigarettes have anything to say to do with it, it's not gonna last that long.
Well, we're all reincarnated.
Yeah,
anyway,
that's true. So yeah, of course. You know. Of course. Yeah.
Energy can never be created or destroyed, you know.
We'll get into that in a bit. But Gene Genie of Future Twin, from SF, are you originally from San Francisco, or are you a transplant?
Well, I was actually born outside of Seattle.
Really?
In Bremerton.
Bremerton?
Yeah.
No way, man.
Yeah, totally.
I grew up in like Paulsbow area.
Yeah, I was a Navy brat. My dad was a sailor for like 20 years.
So Keyport, Bangor?
Well, I only lived there till I was three, so
I have no recollection of it. Okay.
No, but then from there we moved to Deep South, Charleston, South Carolina, and then lived in Georgia for a bit, and then after that did my time in the Rust Belt, aka Cincinnati, Ohio.
Wow.
Which also includes the Rust Belt is, you know, instead of the Bible Belt or other things, we call it the Rust Belt because it's the industrial wasteland.
Yes.
So it's Cleveland, yeah. Detroit, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Toledo, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then I moved out to San Francisco in 2007, pretty much right after I graduated college. I'd never actually been to San Francisco ever. And I think I'd been to LA like once for 5 hours.
And you actually
LA
like,
over.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So yeah,
you can learn a lot about a place in the airport,
you know,
but so did you just, I mean, you moved out there sight unseen.
Yeah, totally.
Like that was the idea. You were going to move there. You were moving to San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, I'd spent a lot of time and I'd been in Cincinnati for 10 years or so, you know,
yeah.
Came up, went to junior high, high school, did some traveling, finished college. And, you know, I was fortunate to find, kind of coup, if you will, of other kind of like-minded artists that uh-huh. were really into just doing kind of cutty stuff and weren't really into the whole commodification of the object side of the artwork thing.
Sure.
And it was really great, but we were super in the minority, you know. Cincinnati is a very conservative place and...
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, so after a lot
Is there much of a music scene in Cincinnati?
There is, yeah.
There's
a huge music scene. I mean, it's not huge, but I mean, there's a tight-knit music scene there with a lot of talented people. Cincinnati is heavily populated by, like, Appalachian people, so it's a lot of, you know, we're right above Kentucky.
Sure,
I
sure.
I still talk about it like I'm Cincinnati, but, you know, I'm a third Rust Belt, a third Deep South, and a third West Coast
at this
point. So, yeah, and then I just, you know, I'd been working with a lot of different people, producing happenings and art events and this and that, and there's a lot of really fucked up racism in Cincinnati. It's kind of the place where it's right on the old Mason-Dixon line, and
uh-huh.
back in the day, in like the 1800s, it was largely settled by German people who... You know, no offense to any Germans out there, but historically people of German descent sometimes like beer a lot. So there were like a ton of breweries in Cincinnati
uh-huh.
and they would build these sub basements deep underground, like 3-4 levels of basements to store their old kegs of beer to
yeah.
keep them cold. So then when the Civil War was breaking out and everything and people were trying to like escape from oppression and a bunch of bullshit, Cincinnati turned into a large bottleneck of people coming in because they could access a lot of these underground tunnels. So it became a huge place for the Underground Railroad to basically get people out of the, you know, at the time, repressive South and
yeah.
into the freedom of the North.
Oh, wow.
The freedom, you know.
Sure.
So then, you know, fast forward another 100 years or so, and there was just really bad... I don't know. The city just kind of started collapsing on itself, and there was like really bad just oversight with dealing with blight and stuff. And so
yeah.
Cincinnati just kind of became like a more and more hard town to live in. And
the only thing I've ever really known about Cincinnati all just comes from WKRP.
Yeah.
That old television show, that sitcom.
Yeah, I don't know.
WKRP in Cincinnati. It was like, you know, back in like early 80s.
Well, there's also that. There's that station out of Oxford with that was in Rain Man. It was like 97X, bam, the future of rock and roll. I interviewed them for like my high school newspaper. I thought it was
really?
The coolest thing. Yeah, I had a huge crush on my editor, who was like my. We shared a part in some high school play because I was always cast as small men for some reason. that were drunk also, I swear. Over and over again.
Yeah.
Well, in high school drama, there's a lot of ladies that participate and a lot of few men. And then because we're still in this like patriarchal mess, you know, there's so little parts for females because a lot of the right. scripts are written by men. And
sure, sure.
A lot of the leads are men and the female parts is the lead's girlfriend or the lead's mom or something. And so... You know, so they needed more people, you know, they needed to fill these roles and they didn't want to just give it all to like the six guys that are coming to the tryouts when there's like 100 other girls, you know. So, yeah. So then, you know, I guess they were like, oh, that girl, she seems androgynous. She'll be fine playing, you know, Mr. Martini.
Did you have a problem with that when you were a kid?
No.
Like, did that bother you at all?
No, not at all. I mean, yeah. I always tried to kind of, you know, I mean, I don't know at what point in my life that I kind of overtly realized that androgyny is super cool. But at some point I, you know, I used to say things like, yeah, you know, guys that carry bags and girls that climb trees. It's cool. You know, it's cool.
Yeah.
Balance.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I try to do with my daughters.
Sexy. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Not for the daughter.
I'm not the sexy part,
you know, yes, but I mean, it is attractive, you know, to be a well-balanced person. Your daughter's like five.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want her to be sexy yet. I probably don't ever want her to be sexy, but,
fatherhood.
Yeah. Yeah. That's being a parent,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do want her to climb trees and stuff. Like the other day we were like weeding this whole big patch, you know, under the tree and like we were finding worms and stuff. And I was just like, Tatum, come and check out this
worm.
And she was like,
right now.
Every worm that she saw, she was like, that's the biggest worm I've ever seen. You know, and so, you know, I'm trying to cultivate something in her that, like, she can be fine wearing her pink dress if she wants to and then go and just get it covered in mud.
Yeah.
You know?
But then
I think that's a good balance.
Then you got to teach her how to clean the mud
well,
on her own dress.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one thing is like, okay,
accountability.
Well, you did it. So now you pick
up. So next time.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So being an Army brat, this is something that I'm always very interested in.
Navy
brat.
Yeah,
sorry.
They're
Ooh.
Really particular. There's a hierarchy or something. I don't know.
And I was talking to a guy about this last night because he was in the same position, a bit younger than both of us, but ended up in Bremerton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dad worked at like Keyport, I think it was, as a subcontractor. And but I'm always really interested in this because I grew up in a small town, always stayed in that small town.
Yeah.
Like never moved out until I went to college and then moved to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody like yourself, I mean, you went to, I mean, just had a laundry list of place that you were picking up and going to. I mean, was that kind of a rough childhood at all? Or do you ever think about that?
Well, I mean,
in that respect,
I think people probably had rougher childhoods, you know, I mean,
sure,
in the grand scheme of things. And also I wouldn't really know what to compare it to since that was my childhood, you know, it's kind of hard to say if it was like rough or not, but I do remember being a small person and crying, you know, and I was going to have to leave my best friend again. And, you know, I'm seven, so I can't just buy a plane ticket.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I'm talking about. But, like that's gotta be kind of tough on a child.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough in certain lights, but then, you know, in other lights, I hope I have social skills, but I remember being, you know, younger and, you know, coming into a new crew of people, and it was mostly smaller towns that I was moving to, so it was a lot of people that had been friends since they were very small and very, you know, close-knit, and then I was the new kid or whatever. And I just, at some point, I just started kind of basically making a fool of myself, but not, I hope not in like a really demeaning to me way, but more physical humor, slapstick, like up on the monkey bars, falling, you know, but I would basically just do anything to kind of get people to laugh and sort of break the ice. And
were you kind of a class clown?
I
wasn't. Did you like break up? Were you interruptive?
No,
in
actually,
class,
I was a really good
like
student.
Yeah?
I was like straight A's, perfect attendance and
Whoa.
Stuff. But I did get into some fights sometimes, and
like bad ones.
Yeah, I remember vaguely like being at the principal a lot, and then in high school, I remember, I don't know, it all kind of,
they must
you
have
know,
been.
It all gets a little blurry towards like junior, senior year, you know. But I had kind of established myself at some point of being more or less solid, and I was in some, you know, AP classes. I think the high school I went to, I was fortunate that the lady who was the advanced placement curriculum coordinator was also the vice principal who would deal with all the truancy and the delinquency stuff.
Okay.
So I would come in and she'd say, you know, you just
hygiene.
Walked out of class, you know, you tried to get your forged slip to go through saying that you could leave, and we said this is a forgery, and then you left anyway, and that's not okay. But since you're in these AP classes and you're really good and nice and polite, I guess we'll let it slide. And
so that was what I was gonna say.
That's
like
some
you
white
must have
fucking
got
privilege right there, you know, because I find
indeed that's what I was gonna say, like you probably got away with a ton of shit because you were doing so well in school.
I think she was also kind of butch, so maybe that came through. I was climbing trees. I was like, oh, I was late for class because I was climbing trees out there, you know?
Doing, she was like, you
doing
know,
the
Jane,
work for the movement. You
I
know?
Really like you.
It's all fine.
Yeah. In her deep feminine voice. Yeah.
Like, thank you, Vice President of Milford High School, or whatever year.
So, when did music come into the mix? Were you always into music? Were your parents listening to it?
My parents are dear, dear people. They were raised in the, you know, deep backwoods of Minnesota.
Love it when a sentence starts like
and,
that.
And you know, so my first concert that I ever went to, I am going to admit here, and we'll see how, you know, widely distributed this podcast goes, but it was Michael Bolton.
Whoa.
My parents. Yeah. So, you know, taste in music, not totally from the parents. but I remember being a little kid. They always were really supportive. You know, they're loving people. And they gave me, I remember when I was probably five or something, they gave me my first little stereo. It was a little pink radio that had a cassette player in it. And I would sit up in my room and I'd record radio shows just all the time. And this was in, you know, wherever I was, Charleston, South Carolina. But it was really a town called Somerville, and I went to a school called Flower Town. It's a real place, I swear.
What?
But, and I would tape these radio shows.
Flower Town?
Yeah, in Somerville, yeah. I know, I tell people later, and I'm living in San Francisco, and maybe I'm wearing a rainbow dress and smoking a joint, and they're like, sure. But yeah, I would tape these radio shows for an hour or something.
And like, are we talking like talk radio or are we talking like
no,
music?
No, it was just radio. Yeah, it wasn't even actually really a show. I didn't have it together enough to, you know, I would just be taping Paula Abdul and whatever.
There you go.
And then I would go and I'd have the recording of it, and then I'd go back and meticulously listen to every line and pause and play and rewind and pause and play and write out every lyric for the songs, and then I would sit and then I would sing along with it, you know. And so I did that for a while, and then I thought, you know, it'd be really nice to have some of my own music that, you know, I could make up my own words to.
How old are you at this point? When
probably 6 or 7 or something. I mean, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8. I have this thing called dyslexia. We can talk about that in a minute. But it's basically a tenuous grasp of space and time. It's an emerging condition I'm trying to create awareness of.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
So,
I think I suffer from that as well.
Yeah, I know. It goes around.
Every
you know?
Like every memory that I have, I'm just always like, yeah, I was probably 5.
Yeah, probably.
And they're like, no, you were 10 when that happened. That's... Like my parents will be like, no, you were 10 when that happened.
Duh.
Be like, oh, okay.
See, they've probably been dancing a lot and that's why they know.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So then I asked my mother at some point if she had some music that didn't have words to it that I could try to sing
to
over.
And stuff? And, oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I got something. And she gave me, I think it was, because, you know, this is the Michael Bolton set, you know.
Right.
So
right.
She gave me a recording of nature sounds, and it was all whales or something. So I was listening to that. I was like, this is cool. This is kind of cool. Not exactly what I had in mind, because it's all, you know. So, and so then at some point...
Did you take that and try to sing with it, though?
No, I didn't.
No?
Okay. I knew that wasn't what I wanted. I listened to it, but I didn't try to sing along alone up in my room. And so then I think, you know, maybe by the time I was in third or fourth grade, probably, so that would be, you know, 8 or 9, they gave me a little Casio keyboard, my parents, for another birthday or something.
Oh, yeah.
And
every kid had one of those.
Yeah. So then I would sit up in my room for hours and play that. And then, you know, at some point, I guess maybe when I was in kindergarten or preschool or something, I always was in, I remember there was a music teacher, I think, for the preschool. And she said this thing to my mom, and my mom always tells me, but the kindergarten teacher said to my mom, she was like, you know, your daughter, she just has music all inside her, you know? And my mom would tell me that. And so I guess, yeah, I just always kind of liked it for some reason. And
you gravitated
and
towards
then,
it.
Yeah, yeah, over time, I got my first love gave me an acoustic guitar that he'd bought from a pawn shop for $100. Randomly just showed up on my doorstep one day with the guitar. And he taught me how to play a little bit. And that was when I was 17. And
so high school.
Yeah. And so then I picked up, picked up, you know, just learned from other people, mostly men that, you know, had really high guitar chops, and just try to, you know, learn the scales and different things from them. And then I started playing in my first band in Cincinnati, my first real band. Well, the first real band, well, we were called Get Sweaty, and it was awesome. It was the best band name I'll ever have.
That's a pretty... There was a band here in Seattle that an old friend of mine, it was just Sweaty.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good band
name. Get Sweaty is like a command, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and people would be like, yeah, I opened up the paper, and I saw this name, and I didn't know anything else, but I just knew I had to be there, you know? Yeah, it was great. That was the best band ever.
Are you the type of person that gets nervous... like when you would first go up on stage? I mean, you had been in school plays and things like that, but you know, doing music with people is a totally different animal, right?
Yeah. I mean, I generally, you know, well, some people, one time somebody, a friend of mine, another musician in San Francisco, he said, we were dating for a little bit, and he said something. He's like, well, you know, we were just having a casual conversation. He's like, da-da-da-da. Well, you know, you're pretty high-strung, so da-da-da. And I said, you think I'm high-strung? You know, really, you know, I was joking. Yeah, I don't know if he got it. But yeah, I try to smoke a lot of weed, you know. And but I do, I get nervous. I get nervous because it's, you know, being a contemporary working musician, there's not a ton of monetary support, and so you have to do a lot of things, you know. So I'm basically like the manager, the publicist, the booking agent, you know. I have people that help out from time to time with that, but it's all on a very like emerging level, you know. I moved to San Francisco, didn't know anybody, I wasn't introduced, I didn't really have any connections. I've had to like forge them, and
I'm talking about like stage.
Yeah, that stuff. Like, honestly, like when there's a huge crowd and I love it, but I'm like nervous about like, okay, is my drummer gonna complain about being hungry? Is like my producer gonna like miss their cues? You know, and maybe that's bad.
That's
I have trust issues. You
that's
know,
that's what you're thinking about.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes literally in my head, before a guitar solo, I'll be like, I'm totally going to fuck this up. But that's bad, you know, because there is something to the whole visualization. So I try to, you know, I try to cultivate more mindfulness. And it's also just something that as you kind of get into, you know, people talk about the flow state, you know, which is sort of essentially you've done so much of the preparation work that you have the muscle memory. And this is in the specific context of music. So then when you're actually up there and you're performing it, you kind of are an autopilot because you have been doing this. So, I mean, I practice blindfolded a lot alone. So no one else.
Are you serious? You practice blindfolded?
Yes.
Like you actually do that?
Well, because playing guitar and then being the lead singer, the front person, you know, you don't want to be looking down at your neck. You know?
I have never heard of anybody doing that before. That's amazing.
Yeah, sometimes take our shirts off, you know.
That's a really good idea, though.
Yeah.
The shirts off part.
Yeah.
The blindfold, not
right.
so much.
Or just, you know, we'll turn the lights off. For about a year, Tyson Vogel from Tugelons was playing drums with Future Twin to kind of fill in when another drummer was getting pregnant and going to grad school. But you know, he came in and he was like, let's turn all the lights off. We don't have to be blindfolded. But, you know, it simulates the club atmosphere because a lot of times it's really dark. So it's just good to be able to know spatially what's up.
Where you're at.
You know, and you don't have to look. You don't have to think as much. So I don't really get as nervous about me playing as much, but I get nervous about all the other fun
all the
details.
Other stuff just working out.
So if anybody ever wants to work as a tour manager with me, you let me know. Okay, it'd be amazing.
Get in touch.
Yeah,
get in touch. Well, let's do this. Let's go with our second musical break, featuring music by Future Twin in this week's episode. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guests this week, Gene Genie. Yeah, that's right. That's a real name.
He's looking at me.
I gave her a concerning look.
Just Google it. Don't pay attention to David Bowie. Yeah. That's the past. Okay?
Somebody's fucking with me. Gene Genie of the band Future Twin. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Mine is too, by the way, so, you know, you're not the only one suffering here, Gene. We're back here at the backyard. Gene's out of whiskey.
And so are you.
And so am I, and things just got dark.
Good joke. Despite the beautiful sunlight filtering in beyond the rose
right,
bushes.
You know? Right, exactly. So you said off air that you used to be a music journalist.
It's true, yeah. Yeah. I have a degree in journalism.
Really? That's what you went to college for?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, is that like what you set out, like after high school? Were you the type of person that had it just fucking figured out?
No.
I was about to say, fuck you.
I ironically went to school. My mom...
Swearing
my
a lot
mom,
in this episode.
Okay.
I apologize.
Well, it's a podcast, yeah. Right? It's fine. Yeah. FCC can't touch us. My mom, she's a huge influence. She's an awesome lady. She, you know, when I was graduating high school, I basically wasn't getting along with my parents very much. My last couple years of high school, they're super like conservative people. They're very open-minded, but they're small town and they're, you know, worried about their small bodied daughter going to the big city of Cincinnati, getting raped, you know, at the rock shows, you know.
Did your dad ever like talk to you about that?
No, because, you know,
it was just implied.
It was mostly from my mom. And I mean, later she kind of told me some more background about her kind of coming of age years that made more sense to me why she was concerned, you know?
Okay.
And, without, you know, going into too much.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, So I had very protective parents. But then meanwhile, my brother, who's 2 or 3 years older than me, who was like getting bad grades in school, never going, not doing homework, whereas I'm like 4.0 AP varsity athlete.
Right.
You know, but then I didn't try to hide the weed, you know, and they'd find a joint somewhere. And then I was grounded for months, you know. I was getting drug tested by my parents. The cops, nothing from the cops, my parents, you know. Yeah. I had to ask like a straight edge friend of mine to like pee in a thing, and then I kept it warm in a heating pad, you know, the night before I had to go, and then I was pouring it in, and I was nervous.
Oh, wow. You went really, you went all out.
Yeah, well, because they were, you know, it's my freedom, man. Freedom, you know? I was already in the suburbs, you know?
Oh, but, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a very similar experience. My parents were very, very strict with that kind of stuff, too. But my the only difference was that my parents were very staunch liberals.
Oh, interesting.
But the drug thing was huge to my dad because of our past with, like, you know, addiction and things like that. And a lot of depression and bad shit going on in the Roden clan.
Yeah.
Like I would get caught, right? Well, I got caught a couple times and it was bad. Like to the point where my dad called the police.
Before you were 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, what do I do with my son? I just caught him with all this shit.
And what did the police, this was
And here, they were like, we want to come over. And he was I don't think I'm ready for that. What should I do?
I thought this was a hotline.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah. I was like, Dad, you called the fucking cops.
Yeah, and told them that you have illegal contraband or whatever.
Right. Jesus. Yeah, and it was like, I mean, he was threatening to send me to like military school and stuff like that. And ultimately none of that came to fruition, but he was just so scared.
Right.
Of like losing his kid.
Yeah.
To something,
right.
Which he eventually did, because it got fucking way worse before it got any better, you know. But oh my God, yes, I grew up with like
in
that
similar circumstance. Yeah.
Yeah, but I never had like a sister, and I always think because I had a younger brother.
Okay,
and he was very sick. He was very very ill for most of his life, but you know, I always think like what. And this is how I do my own parenting. This is what I base my parenting on, because I have two daughters,
right.
and I want to be fair, and I don't want to make them feel like they're weak.
Yeah,
you know, or that they
don't socially condition the daughters to be weak. Okay,
I don't want to do that. I want them to be free. Like we were talking about earlier, I love this subject, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Because it's near and dear to my heart.
You know, in the music school, like I mentioned,
right.
too.
So. Yeah. Yeah. But I always think back, like, how would my parents have reacted to having a girl?
Right, because they had two boys.
Right. And, I mean, they treated me
even
like...
Even more protective, probably.
I was... Oh, yeah. And they were, like, super overly protective of us, especially when, like, drugs came into the picture and stuff like that. You know, they were very afraid of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did, man...
Well, and it makes sense, I mean, depending on what people's experience levels are, because, you know, it's... I mean, I could talk for hours and hours about all kinds of things, but as far as gender theory and like social theory with that, I feel like it comes down to the size of the body, you know? So like women traditionally are a little smaller bodied than men. So if we're still sort of existing in this brutalistic society where the end all be all is if you can physically overpower someone, because we haven't gotten to the level where we can all use our words and our, you know, our intellect to resolve conflict or something, then, you know, that's why I feel like a lot of times women get abused or hit or whatever in a domestic situation because they're smaller and they're not as threatening, you know? And so then it's a weird thing where, I don't know. I could go off.
Well, we're getting into some,
awesome, heavy shit.
Awesome territory, by the way. I love where this is going. But do you think realistically? I want the truth here.
All right.
Like
full truth. Right
full
now.
Truth. Nothing but the truth. Do you think that will ever change?
Do I think that what will ever change?
Like that attitude. Like you know, living in a brutalistic society, for example, or like men being overpowering. Generally speaking.
Yeah, I mean, I think change happens incrementally, you know? So, like, every time that, like, somebody gets upset and they maybe used to, you know, strike out or hit, and then instead now maybe they, you know, went to some mindfulness retreat or something, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they won't do that. But that's also, you know, that hypothesis I just proposed is also based on socioeconomic factors, you know? So that's why things like... I mean, one time I sat up all night back in Cincinnati, like a long time ago. We did an 8-ball and we were like, okay, we're going to figure out how to solve the problem of the world. You know, we're going to do this. We're going to do all this cocaine. We're going to figure it out, you know. And the big solution that we came for all of the world's problems was literally educating the female.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, and that's in terms of, you know, like contraception, that's in terms of like martial arts, you know, that's in terms of egalitarianism. And, you know, I've many times been in situation, I've been, you know, abused by people that I've been like involved with. And, you know, it's almost always a situation where there's some kind of conflict and you're, I would, you know, disagree like vehemently, or, you know, my tone is bad or whatever. I'm not like, oh, baby, oh, like, let me, right, you know, I'm right. Like, fuck you. You're a fucking asshole. You're acting like an asshole, you know, and then like I'll get hit, you know. So,
Has that happened? You have been hit?
Yeah, multiple people. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
So it's like a fucking, I'm a statistic, you know. So, yeah, I mean, so now I'm like, man, I should really learn some like Aikido, you know, and stuff so I can. And I dream of the day of my future twin who knows martial arts and can just, you know, do that neck thing where you just like incapacitate them because then they just go unconscious, you know?
And then
I can just like leave a
move.
Flower by their cheek and be like, I'll never date you, you know, or something. Yeah. I don't know.
I love it. Oh my God. Well, that's intense, man.
Yeah.
That's really intense. But I like what you're saying.
Life's intense.
Life is intense.
That's why I get anxiety.
Me too. I get anxiety over like seeing like more clovers popping up in the flower beds. I'm like, fuck, now I got to do that. That's what my life has become.
That's what
now.
Your children are for.
I know.
That's
yeah,
what my
exactly.
parents thought. They Jeez. Were like, we were raised on farms. We live in the suburbs now, but you're fucking carrying those rocks up from that creek bed.
And hell yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, once we get those once we get those vegetable beds built, you know, Tatum's going to be working her ass off.
Yeah,
you know,
but she'll be reaping the benefits of those
exactly.
greens with all the sugars and so the
starches. She'll be able to eat a fresh carrot.
That's right. She'll know what that tastes like.
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned future twin. The future twin is going to be the one, the version of you that learns Aikido and learns that move to totally knock somebody out with a swift
a bigger body person, not necessarily,
karate chop to
you know,
the neck.
Yeah.
But so is that what Future Twin, the band, is that how things is that how the name came about?
The name came about from one of my best friends in San Francisco. Her name's Yukako Izo.
Uh-huh.
And she's our art director. She's done all of the artwork for everything. She's pictured here. I'm showing Aaron our 7-inch right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is Yuka. It's a picture of three ladies on a moped. We started a moped gang that was
I
all women
that.
Called
I
the Lockets.
That.
It's like lock it up, lock it down. You
yeah.
know? I wanted to call us the Slits, actually. But then that's another LA punk band and uh-huh. it seemed a little too crazy. But, you know. So we decided on the Lockets. But anyway, one day Yuke and I were rolling around in the Mission in the neighborhood that we live in, San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
I had this really old hoopty station wagon that I named Shirley that I bought for $500 off some hippies in Mendocino. And we're just rolling around and we're really high and we saw this car that was
a lot of your stories involve being
very
high.
You know, yeah. I live in San Francisco, okay? I moved there for a reason. Okay. This goes out to you, High Times. Okay? Give me that feature. We're rolling around in the station wagon, and Yuka sees this cool looking car. It was white. It was really cool. And she said, oh, Gene, check out that sick car. That's how she talks. And I said, yeah, you know. And then we keep rolling, and then 5-10 minutes later, there's this other car that looks a little more modern than the first car, but it's the same color, same white color.
Yeah.
And she's all, oh, Gene, check out that sick car. It's like that other sick car's future twin. And I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, and she's, you know, she's Japanese. She was born in Jersey or Virginia. Sorry, Yuka, if I can't remember exactly, but... So, you know, she's like first generation Japanese, but uh-huh. she still has like a different command of the language, you know, that's brought on by, you know, accessing it as like a second language maybe. And so I just feel like she has like a unique handle on words, and she's a brilliant artist, painter and everything. And she's very creative. And so I just always remember, I'd never heard those words together, future and twin.
Yeah.
And so I made a mental note and then later, I met this woman who lived a couple blocks from me, just covered in tats. She was having this kind of, she was having a Lockets party. One of the Lockets moved in with her.
Uh-huh.
And so I showed up at the party, and she had this, you know, 1967 Farfisa organ in her house. And I was all, oh, this is great. And at first she's all, you know, what are you doing? I don't even know you. She's very particular about her stuff, but she's got really nice stuff, you know,
yeah,
so
yeah,
I understand.
Yeah.
And I was all, oh, I'm like, I'm a musician. You know, I live two blocks. I'm one of the Lockets, you know, we're having the party for us, remember?
As you're still playing it?
Yeah, I'm still playing it. Yeah, that was me. I was motioning. I'm still doing it. And so then, you know, miraculously.
No, I will not take my fingers off of it.
I did take my fingers. Okay. She was very intimidated. And so then later we formed a band and, you know, and that's when we first started Future Twin. And I just, you know, we formed this band and I, you know, we're looking for a band name and I threw out Future Twin as a suggestion and she really liked it. And then we recruited another lady drummer and we were this sick trio and for a little bit. And then my original co-founder, she was really battling alcoholism and she, you know, I guess when I first found her, you know, at that party, she had been in what she calls in hiding, which is where, you know, she works in the service industry. So it's, you get off work and you go out. And even if you're just planning to have, you know, one beer or something, people just ply you with shots because it's a trade, you know, it's a show of respect, you know,
right,
and then
right.
If you don't drink it, that's a show of disrespect. So, you know, so she's been living in San Francisco for 10 years. She's beautiful and just so funny and charming and, you know, so we're in this band and, you know, and so then here's me that's all, hey, you want to be in a rock and roll band and hang out in bars all the time, you know, and she's super gifted piano player.
Yeah, yeah.
So she says, fuck yeah, let's do this, you know, and then we get out there and it's just, you know, she wasn't able to like, to not have too much, you know, and,
right,
and
right.
So, and she was doing good because she was in hiding, you know, and kind of like sequestering herself and so
taking off after the show and like not like making herself not hang out. Or is that what,
well,
you're talking about?
Before she had joined a band, she was, you know, at her home and
right,
working
right.
And keeping her shit together, you know,
yeah.
And then she started getting into the chaos of trying to have a working band. And it's fucking chaotic, you know, and I am swearing because but my daddy's a
no,
sailor,
fine.
So, you know, but yeah. And so then, you know, when, you know, at this time she and I had become very close, we're best friends and she had to bow out because it just got to be this thing that she, you know,
it's
she
too much.
She just knew, yeah. And she was trying to get her beautician's license. I was actually her model for the first. We had to get up at like 5 a.m. and drive hours in that same hoopty station wagon, you know. And yeah, and so it kind of turned into this. You know, we had named the band already Future Twin, but then in my mind, it was kind of developing into this concept of like, you know, like a person, because she, you know, a lot of what she was dealing with was stuff from her past, you know, like abuses from her past and a home life that was hard. And so she was drinking a lot to basically get to sleep sometimes and to just try, you know, self-medication stuff, you know.
Was she functional though?
Yeah, no, I
was
mean,
she able
was,
to like,
no,
you know, still
she,
do
yeah,
what
no,
she needed
she
to do?
She was doing everything that
yeah,
she
yeah.
was doing, but it was like her emotional well-being was
right.
not there,
right.
you know?
That's not a good place
yeah.
to be.
Yeah, and then it was also like adding the additional stress, the anxiety of performing,
right.
you know, loading in the gear, being at rehearsals, all these things. So it starts to, it takes its toll if you're not already like, you know, pretty high up there with, you know, I'm eating broccoli every day. I'm getting enough sleep. Like I don't have the demons from my past. I don't have a stalker, you know, whatever. And, you know, just litany, whatever, laundry list. And, so she had to bow out and then she got her beautician's license and she totally got sober and she's doing really great now.
Oh, good.
And she started playing in another band called Jungle Cat. And they're great. It's a two-piece, and they don't play out a lot. You know, they probably play a couple shows a year. Mm-hmm. So if anybody in San Francisco sees a Jungle Cat show coming up, you better be there because they're rare. And yeah, you know. And so it started to turn into this concept in my mind where it was kind of, you know, someone can kind of like manifest a future version of themselves in a deliberate manner where you, mm-hmm. you know, at whatever point you are in your life, whatever is already happened to you that's fucked up, you know, whatever kind of goals you have that seem far away or close, you can, you know, it's like self-directed learning where you basically you sit down and you say, okay, like what do I want my future version of myself to be, you know?
Sure.
And then you'd go that you just deliberately every day go in that direction.
You've thought a lot about this.
Yeah,
like it's a band name that has meaning. for you.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
for me, for sure.
Well, that's an amazing thing. I mean, I would venture to guess that many bands probably don't have a name that they've put so much thought and care into.
Yeah, well, then we're all up against all the other Future and then all the other Twin bands, right. You know? Yeah, but exactly. Fuck those guys. Future Islands, whatever. Do your weird dance on David Letterman or whatever. Sorry, he's going to hate me now. He'll never hear this, but yeah, maybe.
So one thing that I've been wondering, because it's happening here in Seattle mm-hmm. right now, is that everybody is very, very fearful, and I mean, for rightly so. A lot of tech industry is moving into the city, pushing out artists that were, you know, usually able to afford rent in this city, but now it's like it's going away real quick. And a lot of people are comparing Seattle's plight with the affordability to live in the city within the limits to San Francisco.
Right.
And so what's your experience been like living in SF and, you know, being in a band, making, you know, trying to make a living and trying to pay to stay in and close to where the art is happening?
Right. Well, I mentioned earlier before the show started that I have been displaced mm-hmm. by people that work at Genentech, which is right. a huge multinational.
That's so
tech company.
That's like the most ironic name for
generic tech. Yeah.
Generic tech, but it sounds like how it's said, it sounds like in a tech, which is the frickin' the technical company in Office Space.
Yeah. Right. I know, right? I know. It's like it's well, clearly they didn't hire a good branding guy. But and it, you know,
your place was like bulldozed to make way for this new building or something?
I had struggled for a long time moving to San Francisco mm-hmm. to find housing, and I did have a stalker and I had some bad stuff going on. And then finally I'd found this place and it was mine, and it was mine. I had autonomy there. I was the mm-hmm. master tenant. And when I finally became the master tenant, some of my good friends.
What's a master tenant?
So a master tenant is someone who's on the lease.
Oh,
so
okay.
In San Francisco, because there is so much contention with the rent control, et cetera. And
right.
The cost
right.
of living. If someone, you know, gets an apartment, they sign a lease, but then if they move out, then that lease is over. But okay. In San Francisco, if someone gets an apartment and they sign a lease and then they have roommates that have been there for like, the roommates have now been living there for 7 years.
Right.
And then the original tenant moves out, then what happens to the other?
So it just goes residents? to the next roommate?
And ideally, yes. There's the caveats of it all. I actually also, so I work in San Francisco for a couple of music nonprofits, Blue Bear Music School, which is actually a nonprofit, and then I work at a private art school called Rock Band Land, and we basically teach rock and roll to people who are like 5 to 10 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's one of my gigs. And then my another thing that I do is affordable housing work for a couple nonprofits in San Francisco. And I started doing that after I got displaced because I thought it was so horrible. And I just wanted to try to stop that from happening to other people if possible. And I don't know. It's, you know, it's like that movie Hunger Games came out and I didn't see it for a long time. And then I went and saw it like a year or two later or something. And I was like, oh my God, this is what's happening. The tech elite with their fancy clothes in the center of the city. And then all the other peasants are out making bread in the fields, you know.
And they're nice futuristic trains.
Yeah. And it's all the spectacle and everything. So, you know, and I mean, there's obviously a lot. So the thing is like, this is happening everywhere, you know, and San Francisco might have a more crystallized version of it because we're on a peninsula and our proximity to South Bay, where, you know, Google is headquartered, Facebook mm-hmm. is headquartered. But essentially, this is a systemic issue that in a matter of time will be more and more adversely affecting everybody the world over, not just in America. And, you know, I moved from Cincinnati when I felt like I wanted to get away from something that was bad there. And I came to San Francisco in a naive manner, clearly, because I had never even been there, I literally was like, I'm going to go swimming in California in San Francisco when the beach is 50 degrees or less.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, and so then after I got to this place, you know, and it was obviously easier to just move away, move to, you know, John Dwyer from the OCs, Ty Siegel, all those people, all of our, you know, born and bred San Franciscan, you know, local legend people have gone. Not all of them, but so many.
Right.
And, you know, I just felt like, well, you know, it's this thing where I kind of ran from something from Cincinnati to come here to be amidst, you know, a progressive majority. And now I'd see the white return that I call it, you know, and I, without trying to go too big, it's basically, you know, in my opinion, it's, you know, World War II, suburban experiment, peak oil, suburban experiment fails, you know, white return and quality of life. People realize that commuting sucks and we don't have gas anyway. And so we're in this situation, you know, and,
yeah. Well, that's the rub, right?
That's the
like,
rub.
I mean, you know, 'cause everybody still works in the city.
Yeah.
But if you've got, you know, a job that doesn't pay you, you know, $200,000 a year, you can't fucking afford to live there.
Right.
And so you have to move away.
Right.
You may not own a car. Now you have to rely on mass transit. Mass transit must, you know, most of the time sucks outside of the big city. It sucks here anyway. It sucks here in the city of Seattle. It's a terrible transit system. And then, you know, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You're just totally hosed, man. Because you can't get in to get to work to,
yeah.
You know. Afford to even live in the cheaper area.
It's a horror. I mean, I think that
vicious cycle.
Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I sort of had the thought that, you know, quality of life can be directly proportional to how far one has to travel on a daily basis to earn subsistence.
Right.
And in historic cultures, that meant hunter gatherer getting food. You know,
yeah.
But in a contemporary sense, that's usually a day job or whatever you're getting to get cash, currency, money, pay other bits of paper. You know. And so it's a problem, you know, and then I try to be solution oriented.
Yeah.
So I started volunteering for this group called the San Francisco Community Land Trust right after I got displaced on their board of directors. And I've been doing that for a couple years now.
Uh-huh.
And I was recently elected to the vice president of the board, which is just like a figurehead position, but I thought it was a great honor. And essentially what we do in San Francisco, which is the most expensive city in the country right now, according to XYZ media, and we buy buildings on the open market in San Francisco that are full of current residents, and we instate the current residents as owners of said building.
Wow.
And we
you use donated money to do that?
We
like,
have,
that's got to be really expensive property.
It is, it's very expensive property.
Yeah.
And we bid on the open market.
Holy shit.
So we have different avenues of financing that come from federal grants through the Housing and Urban Development, through private foundations like the Levi's Foundation, which was started in San Francisco. We get grants from the Catholic Diocese. Yeah, sometimes. I personally went in and told a story to the Diocese about not very religious here, but trying to pronounce the words right, and told my personal story about it, and they increased our funding 200%.
Wow!
After they heard from somebody
that's amazing
about it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then we get, you know, some grants from
God. I wonder if they're doing something like that up here in Seattle. I have
so
no
there's
idea.
A national consortium of land trusts, and a lot of people know about the concept of land trust, but. It's what's been more established as a land trust concept is the open land trust. You know, there's like a Mojave Desert land trust, and a land trust in that context would go in and say, this is undeveloped wild land.
Yeah.
And so we're creating a land trust to protect it from being built on or whatever. Right?
Sure. Sure.
And a lot of people are familiar with that. And then, so there's an emerging model, emerging concept that's a community land trust, and community is essentially synonymous with urban. And it's also in the interest of preservation, but it's preserving culture that has created the cultural capital that is the city. So, you know, artists in Seattle, Mudhoney, for example, you know, they're probably not really rich. You know, I've partied with those guys, you know, they're like regular people, but you know, they have their families, their mortgages, their, you know,
sure.
kind of regular stuff, they can't compete with somebody that's maybe earning, you know, $200 to $300 an hour full time, a tech worker or whatever.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And that's totally true. I'll tell you this, Mark Arm.
Yeah.
Been on the show.
Yeah.
Drives same van you have.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Really? That's funny. Yeah. Well, the Chevy Astros are good because they're shorter, so you can park them in the city.
That's right.
So that's why we
got them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so essentially are the community land trusts, it's our main missions are to stop displacement is our number one mission. And then our second mission is to create permanently affordable housing. So we take the building forever off of the speculative real estate market by instating the current residents as owners. We maintain ownership of the land, mm-hmm. and then we lease the building to the current residents for 99 years with an option to renew every 99 years.
That's cool.
Which is another legal form of ownership.
Right, right.
And so it's emerging and not a lot of people know about. Ironically, when I was researching this, when I was researching land, the community land trusts, I found that the first sort of semblance of one started, I think, back in the 60s in Alabama with a bunch of farmers who, you know, were coming together and they're like, yeah, we're getting fucked over by the power elite. We got to collectivize so we can, access some land and hold it autonomously.
Right, right.
And so, but they weren't calling it a community land trust. They were basically starting this model. And then the first official community land trust started in 1983 in Cincinnati.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, bringing it all home.
Yeah, it was ironic, you know, which is also the year I was born. So,
hey, there you go.
Yeah, so... So now, you know...
Well, that sounds... I mean, it sounds... sorry to cut you off, we're running low on time here, but... it sounds like a very rewarding job to be part of that process.
Yeah, I mean,
you probably have to deal with a lot of bureaucracy and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I find it's a similar skill set to running a band where it's a lot of emailing and cajoling people to convince them to do stuff. And yeah, I mean, you ever mistakenly
send a band email to one of the land trust people?
I have separate emails for everything. And I tell people specifically, I'll get emails about music stuff to my personal. And I'm like, can you send this to hello@futuretwin.com? Because I'm a huge stoner also. So the thing is
gotta keep
people
it.
Think I'm really organized and
gotta
it's really,
that
it's,
shit in line.
Yeah, it's a coping method. Yeah.
Well, Jean, this has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah. Thank you.
And where can we find out more about Future Twin and future dates?
Future dates. We do have a website. It's just futuretwin.com.
Okay.
And that has connections to all the other internet stuff.
And try to think in the future.
Yeah.
Future Twin Jean. What's coming up? From when we record this, it's going to go up. Right, 2 weeks. So do you have anything coming up in 2 weeks? Mid-June?
Yeah. We're playing a secret house party in San Francisco.
Secret house party? You can't
come. So if you're interested in coming, you can write me hello@futuretwin.com.
There you go.
And tell me why you'd like to come. It's going to be in the mission. It's to celebrate somebody whose house was recently bought and she's getting evicted by the new owners.
Oh.
Even though she's always paid her rent on time and she has a small child that I actually have taught in my music class.
Oh, that's terrible.
And she's also an artist. And then we're playing... Let's see. I'm playing a show July 18th in Oakland.
There you go.
At an event called Desilience, at a place called The Lab. And I'm playing July 24th in Nevada City, which is close to Yuba River. So it's kind of like a holiday to go and get some swim time in. I actually have my swimsuit on right now.
I know, you were really hoping.
Yeah.
Really hoping you were going to find some sort of water body.
Yeah, our friends in Portland, we had some van troubles yesterday morning. So we're in Portland trying to get ready to go to this festival in Spokane.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the van's not working. And then, you know, Spokane's was 6 hours away and the festival people really wanted us to be there. They especially invited us and everything. And so we're trying to decide, you know, should we try to do this or what? And then the van gets fixed. So we're saying, okay, we should do this. But then our friends in Portland were all, well, are you sure you don't want to just
just blow that off and come night swimming with us and take some acid, you know? And we were like, God, I totally want to do that. But we didn't do that. And we went to the festival and then we got there too late and we weren't able to play anyway. So we're going to come back next year, Spokane. I will be in you. And I love your river. Your town seems great.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Lots of hugs there.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. All right, Gene, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it, folks. Gene Genie, not her real name, of the band Future Twin. Front woman, by the way, singer, songwriter, guitar player, and overall just a wonderful human being. I hope you enjoyed that chat. That was super fun. God, I want to see them play. I did not get to make it to the show that they played up here, but if it's anything like their record, man, which it normally surpasses in my experience. The live set always surpasses the record. And I am stoked for them to come back to Washington. For sure. If you're down, once again, in California, you can see Future Twin at, let's see, July... now my internet's going slow. Jeez, everything is just breaking down here. People. July 18th at DeSilence, Oakland. Oakland, California. Also, July 24th at Cooper's Tavern there in Nevada City, California. All right? Okay. If you want to hear more from me, you can. I am featured playing a Family Feud style game with Luke Burbank on the TBTL podcast. So go over there, check that out. Wonderful, wonderful show. One of my favorites. And then, of course, come and see the live show, June 20th. Come on, people. Get on it. Only a few tickets left, man. Get on it. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been a lot of fun. You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Only takes a couple seconds. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps, or just visit air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. You can find 254 episodes for your listening pleasure there with people like Mike McCready of Pearl Jam, Aisha Tyler, Scott Aukerman, Judah Friedlander, Eddie Pepitone, how about Death Cab for Cutie, or Macklemore, or Mudhoney, or Sebado, or The Melvins, or John Spencer, or now David Bazan, or John Roderick. It's all there, folks. It's all there. Taco Cat, Chastity Belt, Quasi. Sleater Kinney. It's all there, folks. Our Twitter handle is at Air Raid Net. You can also like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ The Air Raid Podcast. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, as said by a 4-year-old.
Shine. Stars can't shine without darkness.
All right, folks. We've used that one before, but these things don't grow on trees, people. All right. Okay, thank you so much for listening, everybody. We've had a great chat this week. We'll be back next week with a special episode. All right, this is We're Here. We Are Here by the band Future Twin. And we'll see you next week.